The Queer Family Podcast. Love is love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love.
LGBT legal issues are not the kind of thing that gets widely talked about. I always knew I wanted to be a family lawyer, did not know the ways in which family law really affects our community specifically until after graduating and actually getting into the work and talking to families, especially talking to trans parents, and all the complexities that go into being parents and all the extra steps that we have to take.
Welcome, y'all, to the Queer Family Podcast, the show all about family, but with gay. I'm your host, Jamie, and this is the show that highlights, celebrates, uplifts, and normalizes LGBTQIA families in all of our fabulous identities. And this is a good one. I've been excited to share this one. I sat down with Rachel Levy. Rachel Levy is a lawyer based in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And in this episode, we get into the nitty gritty about all the things we LGBTQIA folks need to do to protect our families. We're getting into the legal ease, babies. So we have some great discussions about the paperwork that needs to be filed to protect our families. Also, the pros and cons of the different ways to build our families. We kind of talk through that in a legal eye, with a legal eye, so to speak. And then we talk about trans folks and what we can do to help keep trans folks safe and what trans folks can do to help protect themselves. So it's a really great episode. I've been excited. Stick with it. Listen to the whole thing because it's great. And I want to roll the tape because it's kind of a long episode because we really had a lot to talk about. But before I do, I've been down, very down lately, as many of you all might be too, because Dolly Parton recently passed away. Dolly was really, really important to me. She held a very special place in my life, my whole life, actually. I had many, many of her tapes growing up, and my mother and I used to sing our hearts out in the car to Dolly. So I just want to dedicate this episode to Dolly and send love to you all who are feeling it this week, because that was a tough one. I had no idea you could mourn so hard about somebody you have never even met. But and then Tim Curry, like, they're taking the Grim Reaper's taking the wrong ones. That's all I have to say. We didn't say DP. We said DT. Can I get an amen? Like, what the actual, the Grim Reaper needs to be fired and we need to put somebody else in their place because this is not going well. Okay, anyway, time to roll the tape. Please enjoy this episode and please feel free to reach out if you have any questions, clarifying questions. All right, Helen, Beulah, let's roll this tape. Here we go. Let's go.
Queer Family Podcast, love is love.
Hi, Rachel.
Hello, very nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you. I have already told you this off camera, but I want to say it to the audience. I am really excited about this conversation, and I think this conversation is overdue because you...
I agree.
Yeah, you bring a lot of expertise to a certain area. And just given the state of the things in our country right now and just our families in general, it's very needed right now. So with that being said, before I spoil it for everyone, why don't we go right into your 30-second elevator pitch so people can understand why I'm so excited and what is so important about this conversation. Are you ready, Rachel?
I am ready.
Okay. On your mark, get set, go.
So my name is Rachel Levy. I am an attorney with Jerner Law Group. We're an LGBT family law firm based in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. The firm itself, we try our best to be a one-stop shop for the community so we can help with things like estate planning, adoption ART law, family building for our LGBT community, our trans friends, and our legal affirmation services. And I'm really, really proud that I get to be a provider to the community and that I also get to help with those things. And I get to help build families and answer questions that can be really scary.
Yes. Boom. Amazing. And you did do it in 30 seconds. We had a little bloop in there. So the clock was wrong. You did that.
I'm a quick talker. Rachel, that is fine with me.
We need to chat all about all things pertaining to our families and the law and what we need to do to protect ourselves. And we're going to get into that. But before that, I do also know that you are on a family planning journey right now. Can you tell us a little bit about that? Because you are a member of our community.
Yeah, I'm a very proud queer woman, and I have the absolute privilege. I'm engaged to the love of my life, Ren, who is also non-binary and also identifies as trans. And right now we're in the very fun part of wedding planning where I don't have to do anything yet. So everything is super fun and exciting for the time being. That will change rapidly, and that's fine.
But you also mentioned something when you wrote to me about how you didn't realize how complicated everything was until after you finished law school, right? You didn't realize all the legalities and all the stuff. Do you want to go into that a little bit? Because also with your wedding planning too, you're dealing with it.
I'm going to keep using the word privilege because it really just feels like one. I feel incredibly lucky. This is my dream job that I did not know about in law school. And that's how I constantly talk about it, because LGBT legal issues are not the kind of thing that gets widely talked about. I always knew I wanted to be a family lawyer, did not know the ways in which family law really affects our community specifically until after graduating and actually getting into the work and talking to families, especially talking to trans parents, and all the complexities that go into being parents and all the extra steps that we have to take. And so it's very weird to have the kind of job where a big part of my job is education, to tell people about their own legal responsibilities, to be a very weird bearer of bad news, to say there's actually extra steps we have to take to protect ourselves. The steps are not particularly scary, but they can sound really odd to say you actually need to get a lot more involved in the legal status of being a parent than cisgender and straight people get to do all the time. And so it's a really weird thing to navigate. And it's something I wish we talked about more. I wish it was way more transparent. And it feels very odd to say I'm a lawyer and I didn't know about a ton of those steps, things that we'll talk about today too, but I didn't know about them till I was a lawyer. And I get the benefit of now very loudly preaching about it to all of my friends and family and making sure that we are educating people on the steps we can take to protect ourselves against a very uncertain and very, I don't want to get too negative too quick, but a very odd world that we now have to navigate.
Yeah, and it's getting worse. And to your point, I still talk to guests who didn't realize they needed to do second parent adoption. And then there are some, I've even had lawyers tell me, no, you don't have to do it. I've had every LGBTQ lawyer, every LGBTQ specific lawyer has said, absolutely get it. Better to be safe than sorry. But I've talked to lawyers who are not in that sphere who are kind of misguided on it. So can we just clarify, from your mouth to our ears, let's get some clarity on what we need to be doing to be the safest possible.
Yes. I think very brief, because I am a lawyer, I always come with a disclaimer. I am an attorney. I'm not yet your attorney. This is an informational conversation.
Yes.
And for same-sex parents, queer parents, LGBT parents, trans parents, getting a confirmatory adoption, which is just the term I use for it. It has a bunch of terms. We'll talk about that too. But getting a confirmatory adoption that shows and confirms that you are the legal parent to your child is one of the biggest steps you can take to protect your relationship with your kids, period.
Yeah.
And then in addition, there's a bunch of other things that you can do to protect your relationship with your kids. And those get a bit harder to say whether or not someone needs it. That always gets into, make sure you're talking to an adoption or ART lawyer specifically. Make sure you're talking to someone about your situation. And then the next big things are, when we're navigating surrogacy, let's make sure we know about pre-birth orders. Let's make sure that whatever agency or organization or surrogate or gestational carrier we're using, that they know about that process too. They know what to expect it. When we're using known donors, get known donor agreements, please. That is a whole other conversation that we could have, but please write down that you are an intended parent and that the person that is helping you to conceive is a known donor. Make sure you write it down in terms that everyone agrees on and understands. And the biggest thing that everyone tends to, I think, decide is not as important as the rest of this, get your estate planning done. It's not sexy. It's not fun. Get it done. It's so important. And it's even more important for trans parents and parents of trans kids. Estate planning looks like a bunch of different things. It looks like actually deciding what happens in the case of an emergency, what happens when someone passes away. It's also things like who makes healthcare decisions for us, which for trans people is even more important to make sure that you know who is making your healthcare decisions if you can't make them yourself, and who makes them for your children if you can't make them yourself. And that is one of the things it is the hardest to talk about, is to say, let's be a little bit morbid. Let's be in a worst case scenario, because all of this is worst case scenario. I hope, truly, to go full circle, my favorite thing to say about adoption decrees is it is extremely important to get, and I hope you never need it. I hope no one ever asks you for it. I hope it stays in a safe, and I hope that you never touch it for the rest of your life. Mm-hmm. And for most people, that's not true. Someone's going to ask you for it at some point, and I'd really rather you do the annoying thing of getting it than do the terrifying thing of not getting it and finding out way later that that was a step that you missed.
Yep. Yep. And speaking of estate planning, my wife and I need to update our will. I think the wrong people are in it. Like, we have to update it. You have to keep doing that. That's another thing. So good.
It's such a lawyer answer, but I'm like, get your documents done so you never have to think about them again until the next time life changes. And then we make little updates, and then we change things to make sure that they're correct.
And also, as somebody with kids who waited to get everything done until after we had the kids, you're tired then. Like, you don't have time for all these emails and phone calls, and like, it's too much. But I hear you. And also, I'm not a planner. So I am a last minute lady.
No one wants to be.
Yeah, right. So what do you say? Because I know that there are people thinking, but why do I need to adopt my kid? I'm on the birth certificate. What do you say to that?
Oh my gosh. Oh, and I'm so sorry if I am the bearer of bad news right now for someone who's listening and being very confident that they've done everything right. I'm so sorry. Birth certificates in the United States are administrative documents. They are not legal documents. That's usually really surprising for people to find out. Being listed on a birth certificate is very important. It is usually a good sign for proof of parentage, as a sign that you are someone's legal parent. And so one of the goals of a confirmatory adoption, for example, a lot of my examples will be Pennsylvania and New Jersey, because those are the two states I practice in. In Pennsylvania, if you are unmarried, both of you cannot go on the birth certificate, even if you are both intended parents. You both went through the process of having a child together. And there's, again, a bunch of little exceptions. But in general, if you're unmarried, you typically don't end up on the birth certificate together.
Straight people too?
Straight people too. It gets a little bit... gets a little bit into the weeds of what we consider a bio parent and a birth parent, and what hospital staff accept and Pennsylvania Vital Records accepts. It gets a little in the weeds. But so in general, unmarried people, it takes a little bit extra work. And I say all that to say, being on a birth certificate is not the be all end all of your parental rights. That's not what decides if you are a parent. Mm-hmm. It is one of the symptoms. It's one of the things we can use to show. It's also one of the reasons, even for people who get adoption decrees, hopefully you can leave it in the safe, because being on the birth certificate is usually good enough proof of parentage. It isn't always. It's an administrative document. It's not legal. A lot of organizations and agencies know that. And so they're going to ask for more.
I had one lawyer years ago tell me that it's basically like, look at the birth certificate as just identification. Like,
yes,
these were the two adults around when you were born. And yes, they are your parents, but it's just identification. It's not legally binding, right?
Yes. And another good example of it is birth certificates are changeable. Every state has a different process for how you change it. Adoption is one of those ways. Also, establishing paternity later in life, also common for people, and something that means that that information can change over time. And so birth certificates on their own, not the thing that proves you are your child's parent. It also doesn't pass parental rights on its own. So like, being on someone's birth certificate, that in and of itself doesn't mean that you have the right to decide what school someone goes to, or to have them listed as your next of kin, or that they automatically make medical decisions for you if you're incapacitated. And so adoption is one of those things that just really solves a bunch of problems at the same time. A bunch of other, there's truly so many. I really wish adoption was talked about less as a process for, like, quote unquote, getting a child or finding a child. I wish we talked about it for what it is, which is a process through which we all establish who someone's parents are. Sometimes that's because a new parent-child relationship is being created. And sometimes it's because we want to make clear it already existed. One of my biggest legal pet peeves, which I talk about constantly, is the terminology that we use to talk about it is crazy. It is not helpful and is very confusing. And it really also varies state by state. So right. to use Pennsylvania and New Jersey, in Pennsylvania, if you are married, we call it a step-parent adoption, which for a bunch of people sounds really weird because I'm not a step-parent. Like I'm not, and step-parents are also important, but.
Yes. But if we created these babies together, if I was around yes. for the entire process and then it feels like, no, don't call me step. I am.
Yes.
Right. But also let's get over the terminology and let's just do it.
Yes. And then the second version in Pennsylvania is that there is a second parent adoption, which is the term for two people who are unmarried. And the number of times that I have had someone who very well-meaning will read through the petition that we've prepared or the court paperwork that's being filed, and they'll say, can you actually call it a second parent adoption instead of step parent? Because I prefer that term. And I have to respond back and say, it's just a legal term of art. It has nothing to do with your relationship with your child. Actually, in some cases, doing a quote unquote step-parent adoption is easier than doing a second-parent adoption because there's less requirements when you're not married. Right. And then take this whole thing into New Jersey. There's a totally other third option. There's co-parenting adoptions. Uh-huh. And that has its own requirements and its own setup. And that also gets weird where people say, well, I thought I was a second parent. Why am I now a co-parent? Or actually, I'd like to be called a co-parent instead.
Yeah.
And the answer is it's a bunch of people trying to create laws that make sense that don't really quite adjust for how LGBT families actually get made and how they actually exist.
These are not policies that are made with us in mind.
No.
Right. So we're kind of like navigating a system that, no, they're not going to use the right terminology for us because they didn't think about us. We're not the ones in the center of this. Right. So that's frustrating. And yes, there are all these, and there are new things now, because when I started, the only thing in New York, the only thing that was available to us that we knew about was second parent adoption.
Yes.
And now I have guests writing to me and letting me know that, oh, well, in California, I can do this. And in da-da-da, I can. There's so many different things now. And some are cheaper than others, right?
Yes.
How does one sift through all the noise to figure out what exactly is the most affordable and best option for them where they are? Like, what's the easiest way? And somebody who doesn't have a lot of money, like, what can we do?
Oh, and I wish I had an easier answer. I feel like the bottom line answer that I want to say for every single person is talk to a lawyer. And I think that's something that also sounds really intimidating when we talk about finances. Talk to a lawyer barred in your state. Talk to someone who specifically does adoption or ART law. Don't go to, I say this with a lot of love as someone who has family friends that practice a bunch of different things. Do not go to your best friend who does bankruptcy law. She cannot help you here.
Right.
Go to someone who actually practices it in your state. And try to find someone that you're comfortable having that conversation with. My office, just as an example, we always do free consultations. Mm-hmm. Other offices do low-cost consultations so that you can have that first conversation. Try to find someone that you are comfortable talking to and find someone that is affordable for you so you can have just the initial talk. And then ask them all of your questions. The amount of times I talk to people in my initial consultations where I can tell that they don't know if there's a limit to how many questions they're allowed to ask. We right. love questions. There's so many of them. There's no such thing as a bad question. There's no such, it is so confusing and hard to navigate for reasons that truly, if I tried to get into it, would make this conversation too confusing. And then even in consultations, do not be afraid to tell a lawyer, this is like an exploratory conversation for me. This is, I talk very often to people who will say, I am exploring surrogacy. I have not talked to an agency. I have not spoken to any surrogates or carriers. I am extremely at the beginning of my process. What does the process look like? When do I talk to you? When do I need a lawyer? Can you let me know what the steps are to expect in the process? I love those calls because it's just a chance to get to say the things I wish people knew at the start mm-hmm. versus the amount of times I've talked to someone who's already in the middle of a process. And I say, oh, no, actually, we were missing a couple. We can make up for it later on. It's gonna be fine. But there are things that you could have done to make this a little bit easier if we had talked sooner. But it's gonna be fine. We can work around it. And it's never because someone didn't want to take the steps. It's because they didn't know there was actually this secret thing I was supposed to do. Like the, yeah. to demystify it a little bit, one of my favorite examples, donor agreements, for people who use known donors, especially known sperm donors, because that tends to be the kind of thing where people will go between doing a home insemination. They might be using a physician's office or might be using a fertility clinic by then. And so a lot of times people say, well, we said out loud that he's a donor and I'm the intended parent. That does not help me. That does help in some ways that you both know your status, but there are so many other things we have to do. Please do the agreement. And it's one of those things where I wish we could talk and just say, here's the reasons why all of these things I sound really nitpicky about, that I sound like I'm just trying to just sell you on another thing that I think that you need. Why it's not really, it's not about that. It's just about, hey, even if you can't use me, here's a bunch of other affordable options. Here are ways you could do it yourself. Here are ways to make this as accessible as we can. But the most important thing is protect yourself. That is the bottom line. And protecting yourself right now just takes more steps.
It's better to be safe than sorry. That's what I always say. Just put it in a nutshell. Yes. It's just better to be safe than sorry. Yes. And we got to dot the I's and we have to cross the T's. Like, there's no way to get around it. Like, we have to be diligent in it. And it sucks. It sucks that we have to do this when our straight friends never even think about any of it. And like, I ask straight friends, do you have your will? Oh, I have to do that someday. You know what I mean? Like,
and because for them, so much is just assumption.
Yes. Right. And we can't assume. We just can't assume. And it's better to be safe than sorry. And it sucks and it's daunting. And also, I'm loving what you're saying about like, just find, you know, go to the free consultation, ask all of the questions. And it just how we go about on our family building journeys, you have to approach protecting our families in the same way.
Yes. Any time I get to spend talking about this is not time wasted. The number of times I've had someone who, even if in that conversation says, I don't think I'm going to be able to hire you, or I don't think I'm going to be able to move forward, my response isn't, oh, okay, so the conversation's done now. My response is, awesome. So what are your next steps after this conversation? What is how are you planning to bridge the gap then? What options do you need? What resources can I give you for your next steps? Because I think the main reason I say that is there are so many people who think talking to a lawyer is intimidating.
Yeah.
I try very hard not to be intimidating. I think I am very silly. And so in our conversations, I always try to emphasize it is not time wasted if you leave knowing more than when we started. That is the important. That's the reason that you talk to a lawyer, is to understand what's going on.
Yeah. And there are websites out there. There's one in particular. I'm not sure if she's still doing, but Connecting Rainbows. Have you heard of Connecting Rainbows?
It's a phenomenal resource.
And Jenna, the founder of it, I think she's still doing it, has curated a list of LGBTQ-friendly law firms, LGBTQ-friendly fertility, like all the things. It's like a database of information for us to find the people, which is super important.
Because another whole thing that I haven't even mentioned is, it is hard enough to find an adoption and ART lawyer that knows what we are talking about. It is even harder to find a queer one or a trans one. It is very hard to find someone in the community that you feel comfortable talking to. I'm very excited to get to be a resource for a bunch of reasons. And also one is to make this feel less weird. This is a very weird conversation. I hate talking about it in the legal terms that I have to. And so a lot of times it is helpful to just say, this is really weird and it can feel icky. And it's also something I get. I'm not coming at this from the perspective of a cis person that just assumes that you would have figured this out by now.
Right.
It's something we're gonna navigate this together. Another thing I just feel like is worth throwing in is one of my favorite things about my job is hearings. I am a lawyer. I love to talk. I love going to court. And so one of the things I had to learn really quickly when I started practicing is not every hearing is happy. And what I mean by that is it comes up for me a lot for adoption specifically. It also comes up for name changes. When I work a lot with trans clients and we go through the name change process, is for some people, the adoption process or the name change process, these things that confirm who we are and our relationships to each other, is big and celebratory. It's big and happy and it's exciting. And the judges are super excited about it and give out like toys and stuffed animals and make it into this really big celebration. And for other people, this is the equivalent of going to the DMV because I do not need a judge to tell me my relationship to my children. I don't even need a judge to tell me what my name is. I know these things to be true about myself. And it's such an odd part of the queer and trans experience that I try to go into every single hearing assuming we're at the DMV. And as soon as someone's excited, I am also excited, and we can celebrate together if that's what we want to do. And also for a lot of families, it's a very weird disconnect to have everyone around them trying to insist this is a big deal, trying to insist this is like a big happy day. And I'm like, the big happy day was when their child was born. The big happy day was the day they brought them home. This is a administrative task they have to do as part of family build. This is a thing that has to happen to protect their kids. It's not always balloons. Sometimes it's just a handshake and I'm glad that got over with.
Yeah, we did it. And we finally did it. We finally did all the paperwork. Yeah. And it feels like we're seeking validation, which we are not, right? I get that. And it goes both ways. It can go either way. So
love is love is love is love. Love is love.
I do want to talk about our transgender family and all the things that we need to think about in helping them protect themselves and trans parents and then trans children as well. How do we navigate that? But before we get into that, I have a question in terms of known donors. I've talked to a lot of people who have used known donors in very various ways, you know, DIY ways, all the things. I have talked to people who have just had the verbal agreement because they're BFFs and, you know, it goes great. I have talked to people who handshook and then it went real south. And we know that getting that agreement, getting it in paper is super, super important.
Yes.
And I think most people know that at this point. I would hope.
I hope.
But what do you say? Let's just dive a little bit into known donor land. And also, you know, there are like known donor agencies now. Mm-hmm. And I would love to know your take from a legal standpoint on that, because some of these agencies make these claims that they're going to keep you in touch with this donor forever. It's like a known anonymous donor type deal, like a dating service. And these agencies really make these huge promises that actually put me a little bit in a nervous place when I think about what they're promising. So I'd love to hear your legal perspective on it, because I think it's really important right now. And it's like kind of the craze right now. And it makes me nervous. It
puts me a little on edge too. I think the biggest thing is when I want to start from the place of the decision between using known donors and anonymous donors, always personal, always individual. There is no correct answer. Like, I just want to start with, having seen both sides, there are absolute pros and cons to both. Mm-hmm. And when it comes to known donors, the biggest thing I can always caution is choose carefully and just beware a little bit. And the reason for that is a lot of times people are doing it with close friends or family members, which is also lovely. It's great to already have a relationship with a donor. It also puts you in a weird spot of having to navigate the donor relationship with someone you already know. Mm-hmm. One of the reasons I talk about donor agreements, and this will tie in on both sides, but one of the reasons I talk about them so much, I usually explain them to people that say they do a few different things. One of the things is severing parental rights. It's something that establishes that this person is a donor and that they are not a legal parent. But the other thing is it also sets boundaries. It also creates guidelines to what a donor relationship looks like in any way you want it to. One of the weirdest things nowadays, like the modern era, is social media. There's usually in my own agreements that I draft a discussion about like how much do we want to share on social media about this. A lot of donors, like donors from agencies, want to promote it. They might want to be able to share information about their relationship. And a lot of parents also might be really transparent. They want to talk about you having donor conceived children and their experience with a donor. A lot of other people want this to mimic an anonymous relationship as much as possible. And they want everyone to be really clear on what communication looks like moving forward. It is a very easy way to, and easy is a little bit of an exaggeration, but it's a way to set boundaries for each other, that we are not being confrontational. We don't have to fight with each other about what they mean. We are making sure we all understand the expectations going into it. And that is tricky to navigate when you know your donor. That's also really tricky to navigate when you might not necessarily know them, and depending on how you meet them. Nowadays, there are the donor agencies that have a lot of intent and a lot of promise in the kind of relationship they can create. One of the things I am very wary of are sperm donor apps and donor apps that say that they function kind of like a dating app where they help you to match with a potential donor. The thing about agencies and apps and the internet is people can share whatever they want to, for better or for worse. It's hard to verify information that way. It is also hard to confirm what you think of this person who, no matter what, you are going to have a relationship with. Even if that relationship is mimicking something like an anonymous donor relationship, no matter how much we try, this is still someone that we are going to have to navigate. What do those boundaries look like? What does conversation look like? Down the road in 10 years when I need medical testing as part of my child's healthcare, is this someone that I feel like I'm going to be able to confidently reach out to and have a healthcare conversation? Or is this someone that as soon as donations are done, I don't really want to be involved with them again, or I'm not comfortable reaching out to them again? How often is this person donating? How big is their donor pod? What does your child sibling pod look like? And that answer for some people is exciting in both directions, and also something that you can't always confirm what the answer is.
And, you know, some of these agencies guarantee that the donor will only donates to their agency. You can't guarantee that.
No.
You cannot guarantee that. At least, like, I'm just like, with my anonymous donor, I know it's very possible that he went to other places to donate, right? But that just came with the territory of the choice I made. And, you know.
And the other thing I'll say, just to, because I truly want to be as non-biased as possible. This is not my way of tipping my hand, because there are a ton of pros of using a known donor.
Yes.
There are a ton of things that you do not get out of the relationship that you have or don't have with an anonymous donor. But one of the other things that you get with an anonymous donor is also tracking, is also that they are registered as a donor, that their information is stored, that there's a certain amount of medical testing. With known donors, that is possible. That is absolutely something people choose to include in those relationships. It's also not always something people want. And it's the same thing. Everyone's kind of arrangement is different and works for them. But it also, it makes me a bit uneasy at just how different those relationships can be and how much information a donor can and can't choose to share.
Right.
And that's always the place where, if you want to use a known donor, there's a bunch of reasons that you should. It is a great way to maintain a relationship with your donor. It is a great way to maintain access to healthcare information. If you are using someone like a family friend or a relative, that's an incredible way to keep that person close to your child, to create that family relationship, to have a biological connection to your child. And also, it comes with a bunch of strings. It comes with navigating the extremely weird relationship of, this is your uncle, who maybe we all feel a bit uncomfortable navigating what that relationship looks like at the start. It is also knowing that you have this biological connection to someone you don't particularly know. And for some people, that's the pro. That is the really big benefit. And to other people, especially when we talk about the promises being made about that relationship, that is also the scary part. That's the thing that makes it a bit more uncertain, is this is a connection I can never sever.
Right. I have spoken to many, many people who it worked out, and it works out beautifully. And I am in awe of their families. And sometimes I think, God, I should have taken this route, you know, because every route is valid, right? And every route is beautiful. And also, we need to be safer and not sorry.
I'll tip my hand a little bit just to say some of the answers, Ren's going to kill me, but some of the things that we have decided for Ren and I, we always talk about it as whether or not we want to make a child from scratch, or which is essentially, do we want to go through the process of fertility and everything that comes with it? Or the other thing we talk a lot about is being career foster parents and being parents in a way that might not necessarily involve adoption, or at least not immediately, but just being parents and being supports. We go back and forth wildly about which of those two we want to do based on what the world looks like, what we want our family to look like, what we want our careers to look like. And those things are all big deals. One thing that we have decided is that if we decide to make a baby from scratch, is we would love to use an anonymous donor. And the unfortunate reason is because we, being a queer couple means eventually having the conversation of, if I had to ask someone for sperm, whose would it be? Mm-hmm. And for both of us, we have two best friends that we truly, and I'm so sorry to Danny and Thomas, if you are listening, we truly had to sit down and be like, do we want an Uncle Thomas? And just really wrestling with, do we have someone in our life that we feel passionately about using? The answer was really no. And then do we want to go through the process of finding a known donor that we may not necessarily know? And for us in our situation, my partner is Catholic. I am Jewish. And one of the biggest things for me was finding a donor that matched whichever of us is not going to be the bio parent. Mm-hmm. That is something that is unfortunately a bit easier to do through anonymous donors. It's a bit easier for me to find someone with Jewish ancestry to make sure my children have that connection the way that I do. That also means you end up in the extremely weird boat of looking at donor websites, and it kind of just feels like buying a couch. And that is something, again, no one taught me in law school and no one prepared me for how weird that is. Anonymous donor websites are crazy. And again, yeah, it's lovely to have access to all this information. Never felt so weird as listening to someone answer a question about what's your favorite, I think, like, childhood toy. And I'm like, I don't need that.
They're trying to give you all the insight into the, yeah, I hear you. And yes, here we go with the anonymous search, like, comes with its very real set of cons as well. And yes, these donor sites are wild. It is wild. And many people have said, like, when they're in that process, they feel kind of like they're playing God, and that feels really not okay. Right. And then, of course, just to make this even on, because I think there should never be ever any shame in whatever path you choose. And anybody who shames your path, it is not a good, like, move on. If you find some kind of a agency who says they're the more ethical one and they do, like, move away, because if they're throwing shame, they're not in the right game. That's all I'll say there. However, with the anonymous donors, you don't know how many times they're donating. You don't know if they went to five different agents. We don't know. It's true. And it's a choice. And the anonymous donor conception, it does not have the legal barriers that it should. It is not where it needs to be. It is very true. Yes. And so if this is something that scares you that more than like grandparents coming in, then this is not the path for you, right? But don't shame other people who choose the path they choose, you know?
There is no wrong answer when queer and trans parents have to navigate this. Just, and again, this isn't something that's easy to Google. This isn't something that's easy to find. This is a complicated conversation that is going to involve a lawyer, a doctor, a bunch of internet websites nowadays, a bunch of your family giving you opinions on what they think is the best option. You are going to get perspectives from everyone. Mm-hmm. The only thing that matters is what makes you feel comfortable. And if you are creating a family with a partner, what makes your partner feel comfortable? That's it. That's the end of that conversation.
And for donor conceived people out there, and to center the child, right?
Yes.
It's not us. It's about the child and the children and how we're going to parent them with the knowledge and the love of the path we chose for them. They didn't make the choice. We chose it for them. So make sure we're thinking through how we're going to talk to them about it and how we're going to weave their origin story into their lives, because that is the most important thing.
Because that origin story is always going to be made with love. Like this entire process, that is one of the things I love the most about my clients and the people that I genuinely am privileged to work with, is these are people who love each other and love their kids so much they're going to do some really scary stuff. They're going to go to a judge. They're going to hire a lawyer. They're going to do all these really intimidating things because they just really love their kids and they want to make sure that they're safe.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, so we're all doing our best and let's not judge each other. That's all I want to say, because I've been seeing a lot of accounts online on social lately that are like sides are being pitted against each other, and it shouldn't be that way. Every path is valid.
We're all in the same boat of figuring out an extremely weird answer to an extremely uncomfortable question.
Yeah. And unfortunately, we have to get help to create our family. Let's talk about our trans family, our trans family members, our trans community. What if your kid is trans in today's world and you're scared? Like, what advice do you have for, like, you know better than me?
So one of the other hats I'm very lucky to wear is my practice areas at the firm are adoption and ART, and also name changes and what I call transgender legal issues, which is just the fancy way of saying all the things that come along with being trans nowadays that are hard to navigate and are helpful to talk to a lawyer about. And so that ends up being a lot of conversations that I get to have. One of the biggest things that you can do when we have a trans child is make sure that your child is comfortable. Ask them what they want. Ask them how you can support them. And that always looks different for different people. It also depends on what state you're in, unfortunately. And so the biggest thing I can say is listen to your child and listen to what they tell you and support their decisions. Sometimes that is going to mean doing things like socially transitioning. That means supporting your children when they wear different clothes. They use different pronouns. They tell you what name they want to go by. That also might mean the legal name change process, which is a nightmare. Yeah. It is different in every state. It is burdensome most of the time. Some states have made that process easier. Pennsylvania right now has not. Publication is still a requirement if you want to change your child's name.
Publication,
which means it goes in two newspapers. You have to advertise. Yeah. Oh, you know, I'm going to go on a soapbox. So Pennsylvania, because I got Pennsylvania and New Jersey are very good examples for each other. The current law in Pennsylvania is anyone who gets a name change has to publish in two newspapers. It's one legal newspaper and one newspaper of general circulation.
Kids too.
There's no age limit or requirement. There is an exception. You can get waiver of publication, but the only argument you can have is that the person whose name is being changed would have reason to fear for their safety if they were required to publish notice.
I think any trans people would have reason to fear for their safety.
Exactly. It's a very good example of a law that was not written for trans people that we
not
have
at
just
all.
Stolen. The law was originally written with the intent being that domestic violence survivors or people that are fleeing harmful and dangerous situations wouldn't have to out their new location to change their name. But nowadays, we have kind of co-opted that law to talk about transphobia, to talk about trans violence, to talk about the absolute just assault that we're seeing right now on trans rights and trans equality and the amount of trans people who don't want to be visible right now for a bunch of reasons that are deeply upsetting and incredibly understandable. And so in Pennsylvania, it is a harder conversation to talk about what the name change process is. And it's even harder when now we have to talk to our 11 and 12 year olds and explain to them how laws work. That's not their job. They're 11 and 12. They should be busy throwing things. They should be busy doing anything other than having to figure out if they feel safe or not.
Yeah.
And then comparatively in New Jersey, which is just a really easy comparison, they changed their laws a few years ago to abolish the publication requirement. And now automatically all name changes are sealed. They're not accessible to the public. And a ton of times you can get it done without a hearing, though not always. And so that is like one of the easy ways you make the process more accessible. And then there are other states that have even more requirements I don't even know about that make it harder. Mm-hmm. And then a whole other aspect for both trans adults and trans kids is gender markers, which comes up a ton as soon as we start talking about birth certificates and who's listed on it. Also, what information is listed? What terms are being used to describe the parents? What terms are being used? What gender marker you have listed for your child? And every single state has different requirements. Every single state has different things that you need to update someone's birth certificate. They also don't make that easy to navigate. Every single state, even ones that technically have the same requirement, will say it in different ways. Mm. That also is something where I say, talk to a lawyer, see if you can find a free consultation to ask about birth certificates. And that's another one where that's a hard conversation to have, period. It's also a hard conversation to find an LGBT attorney that you can have that conversation with. Mm-hmm. And so everything is just, it's a constant conversation of what is legally accessible to you. What, not even in terms of money, but just what do we feel safe doing for ourselves and our kids? And make sure you listen to your children. What do they actually want? If the answer is a name change, let's learn about the name change process. And if the answer is that they're testing something new out, a lot of times people will go through a few different names before they settle on the one that they'd like to change to. Mm-hmm. Encourage that too. Support them and make sure that we're respecting who they are and how they're showing up, and make sure you show up for them in the same way. I think something I also want to add, because I think I just did a bunch of sad things all at once, is something about the current administration that we are living through and the kind of political environment we're living through is, it is very easy to get bogged down in misinformation. There are a ton of reasons to do so. Things look very scary. And I think something else I want to tell everyone to do, like the number one thing, is just pay attention to the good news, because there is a ton of good news. There are advances that happen in states constantly. Kind of to pivot back a little bit, but even in Pennsylvania, one of my favorite things to talk about last year was we actually had a fantastic Supreme Court case that established intent-based parentage, that said that you can become a legal parent by being an intended parent, which isn't something we had before. And it was crazy to be having these conversations where we're talking about the rights of your children. We're talking about marriage equality. We're talking about all the scary things that we see from the Trump administration and the Supreme Court. And then also to say, but at the state level, you have more protections than ever. At the state level, there's actually these really big advances and these really big headlines that just aren't as flashy as the federal ones. And the same thing goes for a bunch of states where the federal government right now is doing a lot of work to talk about the things it would like to do, while states are also moving a bit more quietly to protect people in ways that are a bit more important, in my opinion. So that's also why I'm going to keep preaching, talk to a lawyer, but also because we love getting to talk about good news. There is good news.
That's good to hear. Yeah.
Update things for children. The name change process is getting better. The process for updating gender markers on state documents can be easy. Things like that, where I wish we could talk about it more, but it's hard to break through how heavy everything is.
And it also is, and it's wonderful to hear that. It's wonderful to hear that, you know, we are moving steadily upward at a local level and we are working to protect. It's great to hear that. And also when you have the president make a speech and bring up a trans woman and like talk like Dylan Mulvaney, like the speech you just made, just like, for what? Why? Why are you bringing her up? Like, leave her alone. But then what makes me fearful is all the people who hear that and are ready to go after Dylan and the Dylans of the world. You know, like, he's just that our federal government is just stoking fire, just stoking the flames. It seems like they want people to get out in the streets and come after us, LGBTQIA plus people. And that's what is so scary, when they're on TV spouting lies, misinformation, and people don't do their research. And it's scary. I also want to talk about, and we could go on and on, but we can't make this a 3-hour episode. But I talked to numerous people recently who have left the country because they were afraid, and they all had a trans family member and were trying to protect themselves. What are your thoughts on that? And do you think we're there? Like, on a state level, we're making protections, right? So what are your thoughts there as from a law perspective? And I know you can't give advice. This is just,
I have two things I want to start with. The first is, there is no wrong answer. I think that people, and I'm going to just keep repeating that, because really, law is just another lens through which we can look at all of the complexities of the world and figure out what to do with them. And the question of whether or not to stay or to go is just another thing where it's just a lens that we can talk about it through. There is no right or wrong answer, because it always depends on you and your family and what decision makes you feel safest in a world of uncertainty. Sometimes the best legal advice that I ever have is, choose the option that you feel comfortable with, because at the end of the day, I'm not going to be with you in the decision that you make And I want to make sure that you are comfortable with the choices that get made, mm-hmm. whichever way that goes for anything that we talk about. For me personally, just to like fully take my lawyer hat off for a second, I don't think we are. I am, in my own opinion, I am not planning on going anywhere. I'm also lucky enough, I live in Philadelphia. I live in a major city. I live in a relatively blue city with a really incredible support network that it would be harder for me to leave than it is harder for me to stay in a lot of ways. And for a lot of people, they don't have that same luck. And so whether that's relocating within the US, which makes me deeply sad, the number of people who have moved for their trans kids, for their queer loved ones, to make sure that they're in a state where
they're affirmed.
For example, maybe there's not a current travel advisory saying don't go to that state anymore. Mm-hmm. And making sure that their loved ones feel safe.
It's everybody's own decision. And it is a sad reality that some of us feel like we have to go right now, or some of us feel like we need to hide right now. And then it's up to the ones who don't have to hide, like myself, to speak up. And, you know, it's our job to speak up right now. And I'm not going to stop, you know?
Yeah. And I think in the same way, because I want to use that of in the same way that no one should be shaming anyone for the ways in which they build a family. Do not shame anyone for the ways in which they choose to exist as a queer person right now. There are a million and one reasons to come out and a million and one reasons not to. As much as it breaks my heart to talk to trans people whose number one priority right now is stealth, hide, stay safe, that is a decision they get to make. And then for my fiance, who I could not express the admiration and respect and love that I have for them, but they are also someone who had top surgery a few years ago and still presents relatively feminine. They exist as a visibly trans person. And so for them, being out is the only, that is the only way that they kind of want to move through the world, is being really out and loud about who they are as a person. Neither of those people are wrong. My fiance is just as valid in that decision. Ren is just as valid to exist the way they want to as someone who would feel safer holding back and protecting themselves. Those are both correct answers.
Yeah, 100%. And this Maya Angelou quote just works in this instance. Like, when somebody tells you who they are, believe them. And it goes, like, that can be used negatively and it can be used positively. But when it comes to LGBTQ, trans people, like, when somebody tells you who they are, it is not yours. It is not yours to question. It is not yours to understand. It is yours to say, okay, hi, you know, like, okay, and let's move forward.
Yes.
That's who you are. Great. Let's go.
Exactly.
Ay, ay, ay. It's a scary world we're living in, but to your point, good things are happening. They may be happening quietly, but good things are happening for us. And I think that that's a really great takeaway from this conversation. We're going to be okay. And we're everywhere. Like, you can't put us out. Like you can say you want to take away marriage equality. We're going to figure something. Like, we are everywhere. And this community, we know how to fight. So watch out.
And misinformation is a hell of a drug. And it is louder than the fact that, in the same vein that I'm seeing, oh my God, because let's talk about the article, the avalanche of articles about marriage equality and is it going away? And me again standing on my lawyer box with my little lawyer hat saying, that's not how marriage equality works. It's actually a complex framework across the country based on, say, there are so many pieces where I just want to say it is completely fair to feel scared. It is also fair to feel angry. It is also fair to feel excited and to feel like there is possibility, because there is a future for queer people. Queer and trans people exist. We have always existed. We will always exist. Those things do not exist based on one person's decision about what something looks like right now. It's just not.
Yeah. And it takes a lot of work to take away marriage equality.
Which we don't even got time for. That's a whole other thing. But
no. Yeah. Ooh,
my favorite part of my job nowadays is my job looks extremely different now than it did pre-2024. I love how often I just get these questions of, and let's do a basic con law class. And I do not say that in any way to be patronizing, but just to say the thing that they want you to be afraid of is so much harder to be afraid of than they want you to think it is. And so now I got to talk about now I got to talk about the laws and now I got to figure out how to explain this for the average person that just like an 11 or 12 year old, this isn't your job. I don't want to know.
I just want to know I'm safe, you know, like,
exactly.
You know, and, but they want you to believe you're not. And that's the whole
exactly.
thing. So if there's one thing that has happened, here's a positive spin that has happened with this whole regime. It's made our lives very interesting. There's never a dull moment.
Oh, you could say that.
Okay, listeners, we had stopped recording, but I had to start recording again because Rachel just threw down a bomb about this thing that is trying to be proposed, this law that will, because I was bitching to Rachel about how annoying it is that everything is so different state to state. So I can't just have one lawyer come on and like talk all about all the state. Like it's so different in every state, right? So this proposed thing, is this centering LGBTQ people or no? Like, is it with them in mind? And then I'll have you do the whole thing.
Them in mind. I think I would say with them in mind, not centering them, but definitely more inclusive than the laws we've got right now.
And then Rachel said, go for it.
Yeah. So one of the things that is an attempt to make the state laws a bit more similar to each other, it's called the UPA. It stands for, I believe, the Uniform Parentage Act. So it is a proposed law. It is not technically a law in and of itself. It was drafted by a bunch of adoption and ART attorneys, essentially trying to create the model laws that we want them to look like, what we would hope would be a solid standard of laws to have across states. And then they are proposing that as a law in all the different states. All states are also making their own changes to it. And so it's not going to be as uniform as we would hope. But right. also it does help to standardize the system a bit. Some states have already adopted it. Pennsylvania has had it pending for, I believe, about a year and a half now, mostly because they're still considering some amendments to it. And it's one of those things where a lot of states already have laws about adoption and ART. A lot of states don't. And so for adoption and ART attorneys, we are relying on case law. We are relying on what judges tell us or just our own guidance between attorneys. And so it's a way of trying to give a real standard for attorneys to work off of. So yeah, hopefully that should help.
That'd be great. And it is with it does include at least the LGBTQ people. It's yes. not centering them, but it does. It's more inclusive. Yes. And it's interesting because I did speak with a couple of families in Louisiana who, to your point about the judges and the thing, like this particular judge, when they were trying to do their second parent adoptions, wouldn't grant them the second parent adoptions because she deemed it unnecessary.
Oh my God.
And so they were fighting the Louisiana, whatever, to overturn that so that they could get the second parent adoptions. But like to your point, like it's in the hands of these judges. And if a judge thinks it's unnecessary and they think they're doing you a service, which they're not, it would be much better to have this standardized, what is it called? ORT?
Yeah. Like having like some kind of standardized law that every state at least make it look similar.
Right.
Because otherwise now we're back in a spot where people have to explain to a judge why the thing they're asking for is important, which again, that's not your job. That's not your responsibility. You shouldn't have to do that. And unfortunately for LGBT people, we constantly have to.
Oh, Rachel, this has been amazing. Where can people find you if they want to ask you questions or, you know, where can they find you?
Yeah. So I'm an attorney at Turner Law Group. So if you are not currently based in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, we practice in Pennsylvania and New Jersey. You can always find out more information at journerlaw.com. And something else that I will just hype up is our firm is also really proud to be a resource to the community at large. So something else is on our website, journerlaw.com. We also have an LGBTQ resources hub. We post information there, the current documents that are up there. We have an informational guide that we make for the LGBT community at large that talks about a lot of the things I just rambled about, but a lot of the things we can do to protect ourselves, protect our family, and the legal steps we can take. And the other is for all of our trans friends and trans loved ones, a copy of the actual guide I give to my own name change clients about, for a trans person, how do you start updating documents after a name change? Another process that is not straightforward and not easy to Google. And so we post information there. We also have an email list that sends out information about like the big headlines as they come up, mostly to try to talk about how they're not so scary. And so please feel free to check out our information. We always post blog posts and more information when we can.
Love that. Amazing. And that'll be in the show notes so people can just click it. And reach out to Rachel if you have questions. Like,
I'm very fun and not scary.
Lawyers aren't scary. I've just learned. This has been really awesome, Rachel. Thank you so much. And keep doing the work you're doing. It's very important.
Thank you so much. This was fantastic.
Queer Family Podcast.
Whew. Well, folks, I hope you enjoyed that episode as much as I enjoyed it. And if you did enjoy it, feel free to listen to another or watch another. I have so many episodes for your listening or viewing pleasure. Just go pick one and enjoy. There's a lot. There really is. And also, if you really do like this show, please, I know I say it all the time, but please do consider supporting the show on Patreon. You're just going to go to patreon.com/thequeerfamilypodcast. You're going to pick a tier, you're going to join, and you're going to get that bonus content. And you're also going to get my love and adoration for the rest of my life. I love you all. Thanks for tuning in. Keep on tuning in, and I'll see you next time. Mwah.